This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Tuesday, September 18th. I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, our next installment in the World War II Central Illinois Stories series, AM 580's Tom Rogers will talk about a camp in Hoopston where dozens of German prisoners of war provided manpower to keep industry moving in that city. And we'll have a look at your AM 580 weather forecast for Champaign-Urbana, but first a look at today's news. An Illinois House hearing on the governor's budget vetoes filled an Urbana meeting room to overflowing last night. It was one of 27 hearings House leaders are holding around the state to make the case that Governor Blagojevich's line-item vetoes are hurting programs for everything from education to health care. AM 580's Jim Meadows reports.
Those testifying last night in Urbana included Sheila Ferguson of the Mental Health Center of Champaign County. She questioned the governor's argument that he had cut less important or unaffordable programs in order to fund his universal health care plan.
It is admirable to expand health care, but it should not be done at the expense of the most vulnerable citizens in Illinois. Clearly, the governor's statement that community services are poor or are non-essential is clearly not true.
Ferguson testified before local state representatives. They say the person who really needs to listen is Senate President Emil Jones, who has rejected calls to allow an override vote on the governor's vetoes. Muhammad Republican Chapin Rose says Democratic Senator Mike Frericks of Gifford should carry the message.
The goal of these hearings is to say to a Mike Frericks, you know, one of the people who voted for Senate President Jones to be leader of the Senate, you either get rid of Emil Jones, or you get Emil Jones to call the motion override.
A special Senate session yesterday kept local senators from attending the hearing. Frerich sent a letter expressing his regrets and pledging to work on restoring the vetoed funds. But there was nothing about calling for an override vote. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Blagojevich administration spokespeople are following the House hearings with their own take on the budget controversy. Yesterday in Champaign, they asked legislators to back the governor's plan to expand access to health care in the state and find new funding sources if they want their projects funded. Jim Duffett of the Champaign-based Campaign for Better Health Care says the General Assembly should have made health insurance their number one priority.
By doing nothing in the next year, another 40 to 45,000 Illinois working families are going to be uninsured. And all those costs that are being incurred are all going to come back to all of us who currently have health care insurance.
Governor Blagojevich vetoed $460 million in projects he called pork. His director of insurance says though many of those projects may have been relevant to health care, expanded access should take priority. Carle Foundation Hospital is one step closer to launching its multi-million dollar expansion. Last night, the Urbana City Council voted to hand over city streets that run through the medical campus to Carle Foundation Hospital. The step allows Carle to go ahead and seek state approval for construction of an 8-story hospital wing, including a heart and vascular institute on Kohler Street. The move would also affect parts of Park Street and Busey Avenue. The $144 million project created tensions with neighbors who feared closing the streets would cause traffic congestions. John Snyder is Carle's chief operating officer. He says if the state approves the project, the streets will be closed in 6 to 9 months.
I think there's always a dynamic tension between the growth, you know, the growth needs of the campus versus, you know, being in the neighborhood and stuff. We want to work with the neighbors to work through that and come up with the best synergistic solution we can.
Once the streets are closed, the hospital has agreed to allow pedestrian and bicycle traffic. And if the project falls through, the Carle Foundation will return the streets to the city. Urbana Mayor Laurel Prossing says the new project will have a positive impact on the community. She says it will create new jobs and improve health care in the area. Frustrated landlords in Indiana say it's not fair that their properties don't get the same tax breaks as homes whose owners live in them. The testimony came at a meeting of the Commission on State Tax and Finance Policy yesterday. The commission is trying to find ways of reducing local government's reliance on property taxes. Senator Luke Kenley is chairman of the commission. He says he wants to find a way to help, such as a cap on rental property taxes, similar to one that will be offered to homeowners who live in a house as their primary residence. The commission may have recommendations for the General Assembly during the legislative session next year. A property tax cap could help landlords pay for increasing tax bills, which they said they could not always pass on to their renters. For the latest newscast online, go to wiol.uiuc.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Bossert. Little remains of what was once a bustling vegetable canning industry in Hoopston, Illinois. And even less evidence remains of the town's unique place in World War II history. As a part of our series, World War II Central Illinois Stories, AM 580's Tom Rogers tells us about a camp where dozens of German prisoners of war provided manpower to keep Hoopston's biggest industry moving.
Kurt Peckman is proud to show off his Purple Harp inside his office in Madison, Wisconsin, but he didn't earn the medal the way almost all its other recipients won it. For starters, during his World War II military service, Peckman was the enemy.
Infanterie im Vorgelände von Stalingrad.
Peckman was drafted into the German army from his job at a granite cutting operation. He was sent to the treacherous Eastern Front, and in the bitter cold winter of Stalingrad, he suffered severe frostbite to his feet. It turned out to be a lucky break.
They cut my boot up. They couldn't pull them off, otherwise the whole foot come off and everything. See, though, they just cut on the back end on the boot, the seam open, see, and then peeled them open like an apple, see, or a pear. And from there, he said, goodbye, you go back to Germany. You're done for, see.
Peckman spent months recuperating, then was sent to Italy to hold off advancing Allied troops. The British captured his unit in late 1943. He was handed off to American soldiers, shipped across the Atlantic, and put on a Pullman car for Camp Ellis, an army training facility and prison near Peoria. From there, Peckman and other German prisoners went to their 1944 summer work assignment, Hoopston. Traffic on Route 9 today zips past one of the only visible remains of the camp, a bare foundation that was once a barracks on the old site of the Illinois Canning Company. A barn to the south that now houses a pallet company once contained more prisoners. They were brought in to help harvest and produce Hoopston's contribution to the national wartime economy, hundreds of thousands of cans of corn, beans, tomatoes, and other vegetables.
I was happy. Oh, yeah. I was happy to be a POW, to tell you that much.
Carol Hicks has researched the Hoopston camp for years. She says the Germans arrived for 2 summers because the War Manpower Commission determined that Hoopston badly needed labor.
The city fathers went through that to get workers, and it was an option that Hoopston could have to bring workers into Hoopston to replace the boys and girls that went to the war.
So about 75 POWs came to town, including Peckman, in the late spring of 1944. This was his typical day on the asparagus picking detail.
Getting off about 5:30, get washed, have breakfast, and then go about 6:30 at the latest, going on the invading force, the asparagus commando out there. If the asparagus was cut, it was maybe 8 or 9 o'clock at the latest. We were done for the whole day. Then you go back to camp. Played soccer, played ball, or laid down and goofed off.
It was manual labor, but not slave labor, and not particularly hard in some people's eyes. Peckman says the food was good and the pay was 80 cents a day, enough for beer and cigarettes. The next year, Kurt Campbell had come back home to Illinois from spending 2 years in German POW camps, where thousands of soldiers died in horrible living conditions. Sitting with his daughter in his kitchen, Campbell still has trouble holding back his emotion when he remembers talking to a farmer in Illinois about the German prisoners he watched working.
So I asked about what if they got in trouble, do they have put them in solitary confinement in, like a little room? Yeah. And what do they feed them? Well, I don't know whether I come away from there with 26 slices a day or a loaf of bread, because I went home and counted how many slices. I just went haywire.
That's okay.
Campbell says it took a while before he could understand why his mother and others helped pack lunches for the German POWs who worked in the vegetable fields.
I didn't think that was too great, but as I aged, or I'll say a few weeks, I decided Mom's knew best.
Not to say that everyone in the area thought of them as welcome guests, at least at first. Dee Allhands was in her teens when she and her friend Marianne Fanning went to work at a cannery in nearby Milford. Allhands believes that one of the young POWs took a liking to her, eventually slipping a pack of chewing gum through a large hole on the second floor as she sent ears of corn into a cutting machine on the first.
And I'm looking up this hole, and this guy up there is waving, and he threw down this gum and gestured for me to take it, and I took it. I knew he was trying to poison me. And so I didn't look up again. I waited for the corn to come down because I thought they were monsters.
There's only one recorded report of an escape attempt from Hoopston. Kurt Peckman says he and the rest of his barracks helped divert attention while three POWs slipped out. They didn't get far, though. A farmer in Indiana turned them in 5 days later.
Idiots, in my eye. Who in the heck wants to escape when they have it so good?
Hoopston residents looked on as rows of POWs were walked under armed guard, singing German songs as they marched each day from the camp to their work detail in the town's factories. Larry Kuhn was also a school-age boy back then, and since his father was a factory foreman, he had unique access to the prisoners.
It was just getting dark, and the guard knew me, and he let me in, and I went into the barracks there, the one right off of Route 9, and we played cards, and I taught him a few card games and things, and they really enjoyed it.
Tom Layden remembers his father bringing POWs to jerk ears of corn from the stalks of their farm and testing them in German about what they knew about the war's progress.
They used to talk about what had been bombed in Germany. Especially my uncle said, no, that's been bombed. Oh, no, you couldn't get to it. We won't let you get there. We won't let you get there. We always had a good relationship with them, and if it hadn't been for them, we never got crops harvested back in those times.
Those who worked the fields and canneries were the lowest-ranked soldiers. Nazi officers were held elsewhere. Layden and others think they were treated well here because they weren't the ones who prosecuted the war. They were just following orders. And Peckman says even though Americans were dying overseas, people here at home weren't experiencing the direct death and destruction that Europe underwent.
If German bombers came over America and bombed the daylight out of American teeth and killed people right and left, I don't think the American people would welcome them.
When the war ended, many prisoners weren't immediately freed. In fact, Peckman was shipped to France amid deplorable conditions. He walked away from a camp in 1948. By then, he was dead set on coming back to the U.S., where he was treated so well. 4 years later, he and his wife got that chance. He was naturalized 7 years after that and founded a small company in Wisconsin that cuts monuments and headstones.
He sent blessing in there now, lettering.
Over time, he's donated several community memorials to the World War II dead. And that is why Kurt Peckman earned one of the few, if not the only, Purple Heart medals given to a former enemy soldier. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You can see and hear more stories from World War II at WIOL's Central Illinois Stories website. You can access it at wiol.uiuc.edu. Tomorrow, Jim Meadows introduces us to two men whose religion teaches against war, and they each chose different paths as they served the country. And the forecast for East Central Illinois, sunny and warm today, a high around 88, partly cloudy tonight, the low 63, partly sunny tomorrow, a chance of a shower late in the day, the high 86, mostly cloudy tomorrow night, it's a chance of a few passing showers, the low 61, intervals of clouds and sunshine Thursday, a chance of a shower or two with a high of 85. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Tuesday, September 18th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, wiol.uiuc.edu. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.